What are you doing?
Have you ever felt so overwhelmed with the stress and pressure of the complicated business details surrounding the planning for a loved one to enter long-term care? Have you ever felt the pressure of being unprepared and faced with the final planning and arrangements for funeral or memorial services of a loved one? Have you ever been so overwhelmed by the details surrounding estate planning and estate settlements and so forth? If so, stay tuned to learn how you can be best prepared and have a plan when we find ourselves faced with the pressures of personal end-of-life challenges.
Welcome to Planning for Tomorrow. We take life's most difficult questions, concerns, and challenges and turn them into manageable nuggets of information so that you can make the best decisions when you are planning for tomorrow. You can contact us at pftradio@gmail.com. You can check us out on Facebook, Planning for Tomorrow Radio, or if you're calling from the local listening area, 304-399-8255, or long distance, 877-420-8255. Well, hello and good morning. I am Fred Kitchen with Planning for Tomorrow, and Gene, good morning. Gene Dean's
good
with us
morning.
Also.
Good to see you again,
Good to
Fred.
See you, Gene. How are you?
I am well, thank you. And, you know, it's hard to believe that this is actually the last show in the month of August. And September is a time when, to me, everything begins again. You know, school starts. And
absolutely. Absolutely. The hustle and bustle of life. You know, we've been able to enjoy summer. No school for the kids and things like that. The traffic.
Yeah.
Now, here we go. We're right back into it. You're right. Exactly. Isn't it amazing how it seems like that time does just it zooms by.
It does. It really, it amazes me. Even in a week, you know, you start out on Monday and you think you've got the whole week, and all of a sudden it's Wednesday, Thursday, and now here we are on Friday and the weekend coming up.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, in some of our past shows that we've had, Gene, I think we had a really good show last show with Rick Bieber.
Yes.
And Coach Grobe, you know, with Wake Forest University. That was an excellent show.
And, you know, we didn't have very long with Coach Grobe, and maybe we didn't draw enough attention to the fact that, of course, he was here at Marshall.
Right.
He's a Huntington boy.
Right.
And I hope we can get him back on again. He
was
very interesting.
He was. He was very interesting. Yeah. You know, and I think we've got a great show in store today. We're going to be talking today about grief. And I know it's one of those things that a lot of us, we don't like to talk about sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it affects all of us. And those of us who feel like it doesn't affect it, it does affect in some way.
In one way or another, everybody is affected by it from time to time.
Absolutely. So, you know, we're going to be talking about that. We've got a guest that is to be with us today, and we'll have her with us here in just a little bit.
Yeah, well, tell me a little bit about her, because it's Sherry Williams, is that right?
Sherry Williams.
Tate.
Yeah, Sherry Williams White, and she is a grief counselor, and she's based out of Louisville, Kentucky, so she's kind of a neighbor to us here.
Right.
And she is president of Sherry Williams Enterprises and New Leaf Resources, and it's a division of Sherry Williams Enterprises, and they're based in Louisville, Kentucky, like I said, and they offer grief resource materials, and she does speaking engagements. She'll speak at events where, you know, like Christmas events like that we do at Henson Mortuary. She'll come and speak at those. And matter of fact, we were talking this week about maybe trying to put something special together for the community that's on a large scale where we can have our nurses and things like that, people like that, that can come in also and get some help also.
When you say she, her company, they provide grief counseling and materials and that, what are we talking about when we say materials? Are we talking about books?
Yeah, she has books, and there's a book that she actually has written, and we'll be talking a little bit more about that later in the broadcast. It's called Renewing Your Spirit. And it's a book really for, it can be used anytime, but it was written to be used during the holidays.
Oh,
and that's some of the things that we need to talk to her about today is, you know, why is it that it seems like that, you know, we'll experience a loss, and then we'll go a certain period of time, and we feel like, okay, we're kind of working through this a little bit, and then all of a sudden there's Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's Christmas,
and there's Christmas,
and then it all just comes back, it surfaces again.
Mm-hmm. So. I think it's because we all have our own traditions for Thanksgiving and Christmas and the holidays. And, you know, even though we have other holidays like Memorial Day and July the 4th and everything, I guess because they're in the summer and the weather's brighter and everything, but the time you get to Thanksgiving and Christmas, and things are looking a little bleak. It seems to bring it home more, I think.
It does. It does. And, you know, we want to talk to her about that today, too. And and if we've got anyone that's got questions out there, that when we get her on the show, and feel free to call in and ask questions. I mean, she'd be a great resource to have. Sherry also worked on, I was talking to her actually yesterday, and she worked on the Value Jet airplane crash, Flight 800, and some of the 9/11 stuff. She was involved in a lot of that. So she has a lot, 28 years, I think, experience in this field.
Right.
And dealing with a lot of different high-profile, I guess you would say, life events that changed a lot of people's lives.
Like you mentioned earlier, before we came on the air, the plane crash in Lexington some years ago where the plane was on the wrong runway.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So,
So does she do grief counseling in person then? Or
I believe she does. What she really tries to focus on, I believe, is that she tries to focus on training other people to be able to be in communities, whether it be funeral directors, hospice workers, hospital workers, and she is also a registered nurse. So she has that background of being able to know, you know, what it's like to be involved in experiencing maybe not that death right away, but the journey that a family is on when they've been told, you know, hey, mom's not going to make it, and here's the amount of time you have. And she's been able to walk that journey with people also.
I would imagine in your business, Red, that people come to you not just for the physical needs that they have of a funeral service and et cetera, but nevertheless, I think they probably come to you and they're seeking some direction in as to how they cope with things. And, you know, I think you need resources such as we're going to be talking with Sherry Williams. Mm-hmm. You need something. Not just conversation, but you need something to hand to them and say,
absolutely,
I think this may help you.
You know, that's where this past year, that, and we're ramping that up as we speak, but this past year we launched at Henson Mortuary, we launched the Resource Center at Henson Mortuary. The Resource Center is basically an outreach of our business, but it actually is helping people even before they have a need. And the Resource Center has a lot of these type of materials we're going to be talking about today, grief resource materials, books, CDs, DVDs, things like that are free to the public, and they can come in and they'll be able to, you know, just
pick what they need. There's always somebody there to help them.
Yeah, we actually had as last week had a lady call the funeral home, and she has a mother that's actually going into nursing home care, and she, one of our local dentists in the area, had recommended, the dentist office had recommended to go to Henson Mortuary because they had the resource center, and they knew that we would probably have the information she needed, so we were able to give her some of the podcasts from some of the shows that we had with our attorneys that spoke about putting
estate
mom in,
planning
estate planning
and
putting mom and dad into a nursing home, and was really helpful information. So that's the direction that we're going. You know, we're really wanting to be a community resource to people, to where we're not just a funeral home, that we are actually there for them before the need and then after.
You mentioned a few minutes ago, and I'm not sure that I quite understood the meaning of this, but something about having registered nurses coming in, and do they come in for counseling purposes or?
Well, you know, the whole purpose of that was to have the nurses in so that they could be better equipped to be able to help people when they're on the front lines. You know, I mean, they're the ones there. The doctor may have just given somebody, and you know how, you've seen how this works. The doctor will give you news, and then the doctor kind of politely excuses himself from the room. You know, I've delivered this news, and now I'm going to kind of make my exit. And then the nurses are there to walk this journey along with this family.
I see what you
mean.
Yeah.
So you know, you think about that. The nurses and the people that are on the front lines oftentimes are the ones that are carrying a lot of weight and helping these families do this. So what she does is actually help them and help people like myself, funeral directors, to be able to walk this journey with people. Because, you know, even in my position, you know, we'll be dealing with families prior to the death. It's not always at the time of death. You know, when a family gets this news, a lot of times they'll come to the funeral home and they'll talk to the funeral director and they'll say, hey, you know, this is what we're anticipating based on what medicine's telling us.
Right.
And so, you know, you've got to be equipped to be able to help these people and walk this journey with them and provide them with the information that helps them have understanding, because their world is an absolute mess at that point.
Right. You know, I'm thinking while we're waiting for Sherry to join us that it might be a good time to take our first commercial break here.
That'd be great.
And I know that Ernie's kind of tied up on the telephone, but why don't we go ahead and take our break?
Let's do that. You're listening to Planning for Tomorrow. And we are back to Planning for Tomorrow. I am Fred Kitchen along with Gene Dean. And Gene, I want to talk just a few minutes while we're waiting for Sherry to kind of join us here. I want to take a few minutes and kind of set something up. I want to play a quick audio file. And you know, we've talked a lot in the past, and we've been talking a little bit about grief and how difficult that is. I mean, it's definitely a journey that we go on, and we think it's something we travel alone, which is sometimes can be the case for some. But you know, what I want to really focus on here is that there's a audio clip we're going to play. It's of a little girl, and it's very simple, and some of us are going to find certain parts of it a little bit humorous. But I think it gets to the root of what we're talking about grief, and it talks about the stages of grief a little bit. This little girl lost a goldfish. It's that simple. It's that simple. But, you know, it's interesting. You know, even in the movie of The Fifth Quarter, when we were talking to Coach Grove and stuff like that, there's a part in there that says, you know, hey, we're prepared for a lot of things in life, but we're never prepared for anything like this, like death. Mm-hmm. And we can think we're prepared, but we never are. But what was interesting about this little clip, this audio clip we're going to play, is this little girl, she could be, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old, and she is going through these stages, maybe not in the order that she needs to go, that we go through, or we think that we should go through, because there's really no order to all this. But she goes through some stages that really help us confirm that, you know, there's something innate inside of us, and we don't know how it really got there. God's got a planet there, I assume. But there's something innate in us that helps us understand what we're going through. And I'd like to play that audio clip real quick.
Well, let's do that.
Oh, no.
What? Let me see.
Look at the sprinkle.
That's good.
Oh, no.
What? Why are you saying that? Mom, why are you saying that?
Sprinkle died.
How do you know that? Mom, how do you know that?
Honey, Sprinkle's not moving. Your little fish that you won at the fair died.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Because I just saw him. And he was sleeping. I just watched him.
No, he died.
He did it.
What's he doing?
He's sleeping.
Sprinkle died.
Nuh-uh. He didn't die.
You sad? You sad about Sprinkle? Do you want another fish? Yes. What do you think we should do with him?
Flush him down the toilet.
How should we pick him up?
I don't know. We could give something to hold him.
Like what?
I don't know.
Like a spoon?
Yeah, like a spoon.
Go ahead and take him to the bathroom, honey. Wait, you want to say anything? He was a good fish?
If you were a good fish, I promise you, I'll help you again.
Okay, we'll go ahead and put him in. Alright, you want to go ahead and flush him down? Bye!
Bye!
Now, Gene, like you say, Fred, some of that's humorous.
There is some. Yeah, don't try that with your cat.
I wasn't going to say this until I heard that portion of the audio, but I had a goldfish that died, and that's exactly what my mother did with
burial
it.
Burial at sea, that's right.
Burial at sea.
You know, the interesting thing about that audio is, you know, you've got this little girl, and she is experiencing, she's experienced this loss. She's she's kind of in denial to begin with.
She is. I wrote that word down. Yeah. She doesn't believe it.
She can't believe it. And, you know, how many times has that happened to us or someone we know when we're told this news? We know, we may even know that this death may be coming our way. But we're just like, it can't be. There's no way. It can't be. And then someone else has to confirm that for us, you know, and help us, you know, come with that. But then, you know, she walks that whole journey of really, I mean, she kind of had her own little service, you know. She even memorialized the goldfish in the
he
whole
He was a good goldfish.
He was a good goldfish. That's right. And so, you know, I guess the whole point of that is, even though we find it a little humorous, you know, is that there's something, you know, innate inside of us that we don't want to believe. I don't care how old we are. We don't want to believe that something like that's happened. And it has to be confirmed a lot of times for us, that denial that, that we go through.
And, you know, I couldn't help but think while we're talking about the little girl and the goldfish, which is a very sweet story, that actually I think maybe in a couple of weeks' time you do have somebody who's going to join us on the air talking about pets and when you lose a pet. And I think a pet can become a family member.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Matter of fact, there's a term that I'm sure this guest will be talking about. It's called pet parents. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people who maybe their children have moved out. You know, they're in careers, they're going to college, they're doing, they have their own lives. And these pets have become their family members. And they're new children, I guess you would say. And so they call themselves pet parents. So we've got a guest, Colleen Ellis. She's from based out of Indiana, and she has the first pet funeral home. And even though that may sound a little humorous to some, you know, it's a, it's actually working with veterinary clinics, and it's an, it's a place where people can actually go and, you know, actually memorialize their pet, find ways to
totally devoted to pets, isn't that right?
Totally devoted to pets. So I think she'll be a good guest. And you can all, what you can do, you can go to our pftradio.com website, and you can look at guests that we've had on the show, and then you can also learn a little bit about the September 7th guest, which is Colleen Ellis. And it talks a little bit about the things that she's done. She's written some books, and she provides some brochures and things like that also for grieving pet parents.
I caught just part of a story that was on the local news last night, and I think I've got this right. It concerned the Cabell Huntington pet shelter, animal control. And from what I gathered, and this is, I'm mentioning this because we're talking about pets being part of the family, is that you can sort of be a foster parent to an animal. And then I guess if you really liked that animal, you could adopt it if you wanted to, because there was a story about a woman, I think she started out with one, and she ended up adopting about four different dogs. So, but and of course, if you're a foster parent, you don't have to pay for the animal that you're providing a home for. And I think that's a great idea.
It's a great idea. You know, I mean, there's a lot of animals that, that aren't surviving because there's an overpopulation there, and they're not being adopted out. So I think that's a great thing that's saving pet lives there also.
Exactly. I was very tempted when I saw these little puppies and kittens in a cage.
But be sure and check that out on the website. It's at pftradio.com, and you can go under special guests or our professional guests, and Colleen will be on there for our September 7th.
Okay. And do we have Sherry Williams who's going to join us?
We still don't have Sherry with us. I don't know whether there's some traffic problems in Louisville, Kentucky.
She's on the website, though.
Yeah, there she is on the website. She is on the website. Tells a little bit about her right there. You know, when I was talking to Sherry yesterday, one of the things that we talked about, and I really wish she was here to be able to talk about this, was, you know, we for years there was a, in the death care industry and in the nursing industry and the grief, I guess you'd say grief care industry, there has been some a person who made a lot of headway in understanding grief, and that was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was a lady who founded, who basically identified five stages of grief. But now, what she would do, what Elizabeth would do, she would go and she would sit with people. And even if you'll read some of her books or look at some of her videos, you know, she'll tell you, she'll say, you know, I really didn't feel like I was doing anything special. All I was doing was I found out somebody was terminal, and I was going and sitting with them. I would sit and crochet. I would talk to them. Mm-hmm. I would, you know, help them understand, you know, just kind of help them understand what their feelings and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it kind of developed into a whole dynamic of understanding for grief, you know, of those stages. And those stages of grief were, it was interesting how those were labeled out. I mean, there was denial, there was anger, there was several others that was all played into that. And those didn't come in any way. But when Cherry and I was talking yesterday, she says, you know, we've even evolved farther than that in the grief care industry, that when Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was sitting with those people and identifying these stages that these people were going through, they were still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Those
mm-hmm.
were the living that she was talking to.
Oh,
and
yeah.
those were the people that was going through this. They were going, I can't believe this is happening to me. They were in denial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't believe I've just got this news that I'm terminal. You know, I'm not going to pull through this.
Right.
So, you know, Sherry was able to add a little insight
right.
as to another side.
Right, we need to talk about
side.
That
yeah.
some more when we get with her.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
so. Called but, grief indicators, so.
Okay, all right. Well,
let's take a quick break. Want to?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to. It sounds to me like we're coming up to news and weather here, and then we're coming back, and hopefully we will have caught up with Sherry Williams
Absolutely.
By then. So this is PFT Radio.
Planning for Tomorrow Radio.
Planning for Tomorrow, Fred Kitchen and Gene Dean.
And we are back to Planning for Tomorrow. Gene, what do you think? Tell me your honest
feeling. Radio is fun. You never know what's going to happen.
No, you don't. You don't. You don't. That's technology, and
yeah.
we just deal with it. You know, we've been talking today a little bit about grief, and we were going to have Sherry Williams, and we've had problems getting her with us this morning, connecting up. So, I guess again, that's technology for us.
Well, that's right.
So,
but nevertheless, you and I are prepared to go ahead.
Absolutely. You know, some of the things that we've talked about in the past, and this is one of the resources that's available on the website, is some of the things that a grieving person goes through. And, you know, holidays, we talked about that briefly, how holidays can be difficult for people. But, you know, just it's not just always a holiday. When we think holiday, we think Christmas, we think Thanksgiving, think things like that. But what we fail to think about is birthdays, anniversaries, those personal, what I would consider to be personal holidays or intimate holidays, you know, that meant something to me. That celebrated the life of our loved one.
You know, I saw someone that I've known for a long, long time the other day, and she just in passing, she was actually talking to someone else, but I overheard it. Somebody said, "How are you?" And she said, "Oh, well, the anniversary is coming up."
Mm-hmm.
And
anticipation of that.
Yes, yeah, that date when she lost her husband, you know. And it's sort of like the anniversaries that you mentioned, like when Thanksgiving and Christmas come around, but then when you get to that actual anniversary of the departure of the loved one, I think that makes it even more
absolutely
distressing.
Well, it kind of, like I said, that anticipation is something awful, you know. And I heard someone say one time, you know, you hate to relate grief to a dentist appointment or a doctor's appointment or something like that, but you have this anticipation where you got this nervousness
mm-hmm.
and all these feelings start coming forward, and then once you actually hit that head on and kind of address that,
yeah.
you know, sometimes it is still difficult, but maybe it wasn't as difficult as that anticipation. The anticipation's horrible a lot of times.
It is, whether you're anticipating, as you say, a doctor's appointment or surgery or something, or just the arrival of a date that brings grief to you.
Exactly.
The anticipation is so much worse.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I heard someone say one time that grief settles in a little bit, and then there's a sudden anticipation, and it intensifies,
mm-hmm.
and said, the way they explained it, said it's kind of like an onion. You know, you slightly
oh.
peel that onion back, and then all of a sudden your eyes start watering the more you peel it back, you know.
Yeah.
So very difficult. Very
yeah,
difficult
very
to kind of
difficult.
Talk about.
Well, we're talking about difficult things here, Fred. A couple of friends of mine within the last few months have lost their husbands.
Right.
And even though I've been through it very recently, within the past year or so, nevertheless, you wonder how do you comfort somebody? And you were talking about a person who is actually ill mm-hmm. and how just sitting and being with them. And I think maybe that carries over to someone who has lost a loved one.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that I hear families say sometimes is, you know, and we've talked about this, Gene, is that during the memorial services, the funeral services and all that, mm-hmm. a lot of friends and community, people that was in their group that they kind of hung with, all hang out, and they're there together and there for support. However, when when after all that's over with, and they're mm-hmm. kind of home by themselves,
when you're alone,
and that's when you need people more. Mm-hmm. Really, you know, it's comforting to have all the guests there and those that are offering us their condolences and mm-hmm. things like that.
But
during,
it's afterwards.
Afterwards is that lonely spell.
That's when you find out who your real friends are.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. Wow. You know, Gene, it's really interesting. We have Sherry Williams on the phone. Sherry, are you with us?
I am with you.
Don't we love time zones and technology, Sherry?
I know. It took care of everything yesterday and didn't even think that there was an hour's difference in time.
That's all right. You're with us, and we appreciate you joining us. And I kind of gave an introduction a little while ago of who you were, Sherry, to our listeners, and what you had been involved in. But let's take just a few minutes and tell everybody some of the things you've been involved in. I mentioned the Value Jet crash and Flight 800 and 9/11, but can you talk just a little bit about that, and then we'll move into some other things?
Well, you know, I'm a critical incident stress debriefer as well as doing the work that I do with my business. So a lot of times crisis response teams call us in to help with the first responders after events like that to help debrief them so that they can continue to do their jobs. And during that process, we get to spend a lot of times with families and survivors of events like that in terms of debriefing them and helping them cope with a major disaster. And there are so many issues that accompany that, you know, the unreality that it's happened, survivor's guilt, the fact that you lived and someone else didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that a lot even with September the 11th, because I did a lot of work with the fire department. And the guys that were left behind carried so much guilt with them and so many things that really traumatized them after the event itself that they had trouble functioning. So we were able to work with them and help them understand why they were feeling some of what they were feeling, giving them some things that they could do that helped them work through that process.
Let me ask you something, Sherry. Do you think sometimes that same grief that you're talking about, that I guess it would be a form of feeling like, like you said, guilt, you know, that they passed away and this one survived. However, do you feel like that even rolls right over into just families that may experience a loss that may not be traumatic, just maybe, you know, a husband and wife, and wife comes down with cancer or something like that, and it takes her life, and then the husband, does they experience those same feelings?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think, I've been doing this work now for about 28 years, and I don't think that there's been a person I've ever talked to who hasn't said, I wish it had been me instead of them.
Yeah.
We always feel that we wanted to protect our loved one. We wanted to keep them from going through that pain, that sometimes our feelings of going on with life without them seem so much more difficult that it seems like it would have been easier to die.
Right. Gene and I was talking before we brought you on the air here, and we were talking about the things that you can do to help people who are experiencing loss, that person that is feeling that guilt. What are some things, some ideas that you have that listeners can listen to, and they can kind of make some mental notes here of things they can do if they've got a friend that's just had a loss? What are the things that we need to do to reach out to them to help them walk this journey, a lonely journey oftentimes?
Well, the major thing for everyone is to be present and to be with them. I heard you talking just a few minutes before I came on the air about long after everyone's gone and you're kind of left to handle what's left over. And so many times, you know, we find that the casseroles have quit coming, everyone's gone back home. You expected to have gone back to work or gotten back into your regular schedule, and at this point you don't even know what your regular schedule is.
Right.
And you need people to walk that journey with you. I tell grieving people all the time, go to the dollar store and buy a bunch of earplugs. Talk to people that you're really close to and tell them you need someone to listen.
Right.
That you need to tell the story over and over because you're trying to make it real to you and you're trying to discover who you're going to be now. And if you have to put these earplugs in, it's okay. Just nod your head every now and then and act like you're listening to me. Because they run out of, you know, we as friends of people who have someone that die get tired of hearing the story so many times because it puts us in touch with our own feelings. And we forget that these people really need the support. So being present, remembering special days, a birthday, an anniversary, the birthday of the person who died, Mother's Day, Father's Day, sending cards, making a phone call. You know, churches are wonderful about having committees that take meals right after the funeral, but what about just surprising a friend 6 months later and saying, you know, don't fix supper tonight, I wanted to bring supper over for you, and spending some time with them and just letting them talk.
Exactly. I think that's the most critical point right there, because like you said, we were talking when we come on the air, the time that everyone is gathered, that there's a gathering, and like you said, the casseroles are coming and things like that, you know, that's wonderful, but it's after when it becomes so lonely. And you know, something that you said, Sherry, when we were speaking yesterday that I think is important to address here is, for those who have experienced loss, everything that they've been in control of, they've had complete control of their life, is now completely out of control. And it's like this roller coaster that has went off a track, and they don't know where it's going to land quite yet. And so what do we do to help people who are in that position? Because, and really, most anyone that's experienced loss is going to be at some point probably experienced that, where they feel like they've lost control of what they once had control of in their life.
Absolutely. And the thing we can do as friends and supporters is, when we call them and ask them if they'd like to go to a movie, have a couple of movies that you suggest and say, I'd like to go to the movies, I was thinking about seeing this movie versus that movie. Do either one of those appeal to you? Because sometimes making a decision that simple can be overwhelming. But also giving a person the opportunity to make a decision that simple,
right,
gives them a sense of control, because then they're deciding between one or two things. So if you're going to take them out to lunch, mm-hmm, would you rather go to this restaurant or that restaurant? And then they can pick between one or two. So simple little things like that, where you can give people a sense of control over what lies ahead of them. Real simple decisions. And, you know, that's we were talking about this yesterday, too, and that's what a lot of funeral directors do in terms of being able to help people with choices that they have so that they're not so overwhelmed, mm-hmm, at a time when everything is confusing and they can't change what's happened. They can't change the circumstances. They can only go forward. And I encourage people to make lists, not only of what you have to do, so that you can cross it off and see that you've done things, but sometimes if you didn't make a list of what you had to do, at the end of the day, write down everything you did that day. Mm-hmm. And that can give the grieving person a sense of accomplishment that, yeah, I really did get something done. I didn't just lay around all day. And if they did lay around all day, that's okay, because every one of us need a wallowing day now and then.
Right.
As long as those wallowing days don't come too close together, and they don't seem to persist over time where we can't function in our daily life.
You know, Sherry, I so much agree with what you're saying. I'd never thought of it that way, about making a choice, getting some control back, and making lists. What you're saying actually works, I know from personal experience, but I just never thought of it that way. I mean, I've always known I'm a controlling person, but didn't realize that when my husband died, then I sort of lost control of my life. And I think what you're saying is just right on the button. I really do.
Well, you know, so many times when I've been overwhelmed just in the stress of the day, and I'll go home and I think, I didn't accomplish anything today. What am I doing with my time? How can I get my mind organized? Just to sit down and write down what I did do makes me go, Oh, I had a little more control of the day
than you thought.
Now, what do I have tomorrow?
Yeah, make a list for the next day. I agree, absolutely.
I think you bring up a good point, Sherry. I think it's very good. You know, maybe sometimes as caregivers we think, and when I say caregivers, I mean on every level, whether it be the funeral director, whether it be the hospice worker, whether it be the nurse, whatever. Sometimes we feel like, well, we're giving them all these decisions they need to make or these choices they need to make, and maybe we're overwhelming them. When in fact they're living in a world right now that is completely out of control. They feel like they have lost the ability to make choices and to make decisions, and you're basically empowering them once again.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Sherry, you were talking about being involved with the critical incident debriefing. I think I got that title right. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. How do you deal with, as you mentioned, the fire departments there in New York and the firefighters who had this feeling of guilt that they survived and their comrades didn't? That must be really difficult to handle.
Well, it really is. And, you know, I'm always brought back to my favorite fireman, Tommy. This man retired 3 weeks before September the 11th. 2 weeks before September the 11th, they gave him his retirement party. And 3 days before September the 11th, he came in to get all of his things out of his locker. Now, he was an officer in the fire department, so he was responsible for a lot of people. And on the day of September the 11th, 13 of his crew members died, and there were only four of them that survived. Tommy felt very responsible that if he had been there, he could have saved their lives. And, you know, we can't change that thought process with him, but what we can do is talk to him about the reality is with this crisis that you may have died too. And now, because you survived, what can you do to honor those people's lives?
Right.
How can you live your life to honor them and what you taught them and the values and the virtues and the things that you shared as brothers? And so we work through that process. And one of the things that I did with him, because he was so angry, he was in charge of driving me around to all the different fire departments while I was there and was so angry with the terrorists. And every time we crossed the Brooklyn Bridge, he would say, look what they've done to my city. They've destroyed it. They've, you know, I don't have faith in anything anymore. And he was so bitter. And what he had started drinking quite a bit during immediately after the incident and wasn't going home, was staying at the firehouse to help all of his friends and to talk to the ones that were left on the different crews. And I went across the street to a little deli and got a mason jar and two or three rolls of pennies, and I gave them to him because he just thought nothing was right with the world and he couldn't do anything right. And I told him every time that something good happened to him, no matter how insignificant it seemed, I wanted him to put a penny in the jar.
Wow.
And I said it could be something like one of the neighbors brought another meal over to the firehouse. Your paper landed on the front porch instead of at the end of the driveway. Your cat didn't run away when you opened the door this morning.
Kind of got him refocused.
Got him refocused. Yeah. And then I said, that's not the end of it. When you go to bed at night, I want you to carry that jar up to your bedroom, and I want you to look at it real good and see that good things are happening to you. Before you go to sleep, I want you to shake it so you hear that good things are happening to you. And in the 2 weeks that I was there, right toward the end of it, he called at the hotel and told me that he had slept through the night for the first time since September the 11th. So if we can get people refocused on positive things and reaching out to others and finding how they've coped with things in the past, certainly right. Nothing was as stressful as 9/11.
Hey, Sherry, could we take just a really quick break that we need to take, and we'll be right back with you. Can you stick with us a few more minutes?
I sure can.
You're listening to Super Talk Radio, 94.1 FM and AM 930. And we are back to planning for tomorrow. Sherry, are you still with us?
I am here.
Sorry we had to take that quick break, but we are back. And I tell you, the information that you're giving us here today is very interesting, and I know it's got to be helpful.
It really is. I'd like to summarize just a little bit, Sherry. You told us about helping a bereaved person get some control back in their lives. You talked about making lists, which I think are wonderful, so that you can feel like you're accomplishing something. Well, you are accomplishing something. And then the story that you just shared with us about the firefighter in New York City and the penny jar. I mean, that must have been, I hope he filled that jar.
Right.
Oh, he does, and I check on him regularly, and he's doing very well. He's now leading one of the largest kids groups in the community for one of the youth centers there, and he started teaching a class in a Sunday school at a church, and he's really invested because he says he's going to do something to make his brother's lives count.
Wow. Wow.
That's wonderful.
You know, one of the things that we had talked about, Sherry, was the value of a lot of things, but the value of having a service for someone who's passed away, having a viewing and things like that, the validity of mourning, you know, really being able to mourn and the value of that. And there's some people that feel like, okay, well, maybe I'm going to put that emotion off to the side. I'm that in control of my life where I'm not going to mourn, I'm not going to cry, I'm not going to grieve. Let's talk a little bit about that, Sherry, and see if we can give some insight to some people today.
Well, you absolutely cannot not grieve. And it's because of an innate physiological system that we have built into our bodies to help us deal with major stressors in our lives. And even though we think we don't want to grieve, we're dealing with major changes. And any time we have to deal with change, our bodies go out of balance, and there are a series of hormones or chemicals, we'll just call them chemicals, that's easier, that begin to be produced from our brains that affect all other parts of our bodies, our respiratory system, our kidneys, our lungs, our heart.
The things a lot of us don't think about when we're talking about that.
We don't. And the thing that I guess probably one of the most important things I've done, being a nurse and coming from a medical background, is to try to help people understand that you may think you're not going to grieve, but your body will make you listen to what's happening to you and the stress that is caused because you're trying to put this out of your life. And if you have a pre-existing condition, these hormones that are produced, chemicals that are produced, will attack the weakest link in your body, and you will get sick. Your immune system will break down, and you'll find yourself catching every little cold that goes around, every little bug that is around, and you will get sick. If you have a pre-existing diabetes or arthritis or back problems, those will get worse because these chemicals will exacerbate that problem. Your body will say, you will listen. Mm-hmm. You need to slow down and address what's happening to you.
So those people who think that they may not be grieving, that they're that tough, that, hey, especially us guys, you know, we want to say, you know, we can handle this.
Watch out.
Yeah. And,
but, you know, the other reason guys don't handle it, our brains, a woman and a man's brain are so entirely different, and there's a separation in the brain that is thicker in women than it is in men to separate the hemispheres of the brain, and that provides the thickness, provides more conductivity in a woman's brain from the side of our brain where we feel emotions, side of our brain where we're able to express them.
Right.
So women are able to express their feelings more.
Wow. Let me ask you this, Sherry. Are they smarter than us guys? Are you guys smarter than us? I would say yes. My wife is.
There.
So, yeah, I know you don't want to go there.
Just to prove that, that's a stupid question.
Yeah, that was. Thank you, Jean.
I proved her by not.
She's exerting her control again. Sherry, we are running out of time now, and we really appreciate you joining us for the last half of the show, and we'd love to have you back for the full hour where we can really get into some things and offer a lot of helpful information to people. Really appreciate you being here with us today.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. We'll synchronize our watches next time.
There you go. Thank you so much. We'll be in touch.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Planning for Tomorrow Radio on 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC.
Your home of the Cincinnati Bengals and the National Football League. Supertalk 94.1 FM and AM 930. WRVC Huntington.